My guest at this time is Jill Stanek. She's a former longtime nurse who lost her job because of her outspoken defense of the unborn, including babies who had been aborted but survived the abortions and then were left to die. She is now one of the leading pro-life bloggers in the country. You can find her work at jillstanek.com. And today she joins us to talk about the case of Jennifer Morbelli, a New York woman who died as a result of a abortion at 33 weeks of pregnancy as a result of her being a patient of Dr. Leroy Carhart. This abortion took place in the state of Maryland. And Jill, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
What do we know, first of all, about Dr. Carhart? He's one of the more famous late-term abortion doctors. What do we need to know about him before we get into the details of Jennifer Morbelli?
He probably is the most well-known abortionist in the United States. He's been the plaintiff in two well-known landmark U.S. Supreme Court cases, Steinberg versus Carhart in 2000 and Gonzalez versus Carhart in 2007. Both times he was filing suit against first the ban against partial birth abortions in Nebraska and then second against a federal ban. The first time he won, the second time he lost. He is also now newly featured in a documentary called After Tiller, which tracks four late-term abortionists, and it just debuted at the Sundance Film Festival and got rave reviews. And if you go online, you can see him standing with the other abortionists for photo ops at the Sundance Film Festival. So he's quite well-known, which raises the profile of this mother's death even higher. So that's his background.
Jennifer Morbelli, again, 33 weeks pregnant, was intending to give birth to this child. A prenatal test diagnosed her baby as suffering from a disorder that causes seizures, so ultimately she decided to end the pregnancy. What procedure was likely used on the child, and what ultimately happened to her?
All right, well, backdrop a little bit. So the informants say, well-placed informant, that she found out when she was 31 weeks along carrying a wanted little girl, Madison Lee, that her baby had anomalies. And so she decided to abort her baby. And she traveled from New York to Carhart's abortion clinic in Germantown, Maryland, which is a suburb of D.C., with her mom and her dad and her husband and her sister. Sunday, February 3rd, was when this process began, and it's not quick. It's a 2 to 3 to 4 day process. On Sunday afternoon is when Carhart usually kills the babies of the mothers that he's going to be aborting during the first 3 days of the week. And by that, he injects the baby's heart with a medication that causes instant cardiac arrest. He visualizes the baby's heart on ultrasound and injects a syringe, a needle through the mom's abdomen, and kills the baby. Then, and so she did come to visit him on Sunday afternoon, so theoretically that's when the baby was killed. And then typically on Monday morning he begins the labor induction process. It would be called an induced labor abortion. So what they do then is they insert medications that would dilate the cervix to open, which is the opening at the bottom of the uterus is supposed to stay closed until a mom goes into natural labor. So this medication or seaweed sticks called laminaria that when they're moistened, they expand. So they either use laminaria or medications. Over the course of the next 2 days, they would expand the cervix far enough so that the baby could be delivered. And so she did go back on Monday. She went back on Tuesday. And then she went back on Wednesday and stayed for 9 hours, and that would have been when she delivered her little girl, apparently intact, although, you know, I don't know. And sidewalk counselors at the clinic who maintain a constant vigil during office hours noted, in real time, that they thought that she was growing more and more pale. And so the informant says, every night she would stay at a local hospital with her family, and that's also typical of Carhart's out-of-town late-term abortion patients. So Wednesday night, she spent the night and apparently tried to call Carhart, or her family did during the night several times, and couldn't reach him. And so at 5 a.m. on Thursday, February 7th, they presented at a nearby hospital, Shady Grove Adventist Hospital in Rockville, Maryland, which is 9 miles from Carhart's abortion clinic. And by 9 o'clock, she began coding, meaning her heart stopped. And she coded 6 times over the course of the next hour. And about 10 o'clock, they just called the code. They just, you know, quit trying to resuscitate her and pronounced her. That's it in a nutshell.
One of the things that's happened, particularly in the pro-life side of this debate, is what you and others have seen as kind of a media moratorium on this story. Talk about why you believe that is and whether or not you sense it's lifting the more this gets talked about in social media and so forth.
Yeah, I think this is one of those cases where the blogs are driving the story. You know, if you remember back to the Swift boat veterans, they encountered similar, you know, and we could name probably, you know, 1,000 stories that the media tried to ignore, but bloggers propelled the story and eventually forced the media to pay attention. And that's, I think, the case that we're seeing here. I think that there also may be a hesitancy, because this is abortion, to name the victim, to say that she had an abortion, whereas if this was any other high-profile doctor in the United States who killed a patient, you know, the patient's name would be out there. Anytime there's a victim, the patient's name is usually out there. Or any victim, the name is out there, except for when they're minors. But it's just when it comes to the topic of abortion that people get touchy about it. And so I think that there's been a reticence on the part of the media because it is that topic, and also because the media is bent in favor of abortion, and so they would not want to push a story that would bode poorly for abortion, and I think that's also coming into play.
What would you say, as a former nurse, for someone who would get that diagnosis and fear that their child would have less than a high standard of quality of life?
Well, first of all, I know that there is a lot of pressure these days when moms such as Jennifer, who are carrying wanted babies, are given a diagnosis like that from the medical industry to abort. And, you know, social workers are by and large pro-abortion. Insurance companies, I think, are skewed in favor of abortion with an adverse diagnosis because it's cheaper for them in the long run than providing long-term care for a baby. So there's also the time constraints when you find out and you're later in pregnancy. You know, every day, every week that goes by that you wait to make your decision makes the abortion that much more dangerous. And so there's time pressure put on a mom. There's also pressure from the medical industry that believes that, you know, abortion, looking for a eugenic, you know, clean, everybody healthy society. And so you have that strike against you, but as far as an adverse diagnosis goes, you should consider if your baby is going to die. If you've been given the diagnosis that your baby will not live, you should consider your baby in hospice. Your baby inside of you is warm and comfortable, and as well as that baby is ever going to feel. And so you are providing comfort for that baby. And then when you deliver the baby, you treat the baby like you would any other hospice patient. And I have family there to meet the baby, take pictures with the baby. And I've never heard or met a mom who went this course who regretted it. You know, it's the right thing to do. And if you've been diagnosed with a baby who's going to have Down syndrome or spina bifida, all sorts of cystic fibrosis, there's a lot of pressure again for you to abort. And I would still, you know, of course, maintain that no matter what is wrong with any child in the world's eyes, that doesn't make the child any worth any less worth living, and you just have to view it as, you know, you'd be killing your handicapped baby. And what does that say about you, and what does it say about society? And as I've just never met a mom who regretted doing the right thing and delivering her baby to term, even if she could only hold her baby for a minute or two until that baby died, I've met plenty of moms who have regretted, you know, going the abortion course, and it's something that, you know, their baby is now dead, and it's something that they're going to have to live with for the rest of their lives, and they very often don't do well, you know, in the aftermath.
How do you think this story, if at all, will impact the larger abortion debate?
I'm hoping that, you know, Maryland, for starters, which has few to none pro-life laws, will get in gear now. They've just enacted abortion clinic regulations, but ironically, the day before Jennifer died, they licensed all 17 abortion clinics in the state of Maryland without ever inspecting them. And, you know, you can't build a home. You can't put up a nail salon without being inspected. You can't put an outlet in a wall without being inspected multiple times along the way, and yet they allowed this to happen. And so I'm hoping that this will clear the way for more stringent regulations in the state of Maryland. I hope that this will clear the way for shutting down Carhartt's abortion clinic in Germantown, Maryland. It's, you know, it's just a stain on that community. And, of course, you know, this is a tragedy that demonstrates that abortions not only hurt women, they can kill women. And whereas the other side likes to maintain that if only abortions are legal, this sort of thing won't happen, we know that it does happen. And this, you know, whole situation is a tragedy that I hope will give many people who haven't given this topic much thought, or who thought that they were pro-choice, give them pause to reconsider their position, because abortion just doesn't kill children. You know, it maims and kills women, too, and it totally destroys families, Greg. You know, imagine this family now, this husband, this widower who 3 weeks ago, you know, was expecting a beautiful little girl with his, you know, nice pregnant wife, and look now, and her parents and his parents, and she worked at a school, and I guess their children have had, the children in her school, she was a kindergarten teacher, have had to get grief counseling, and it just, you know, the devastation is so far-reaching and just so unnecessary.
We'll have to leave time there. Jill, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Greg.
Absolutely. Jill Stanek, you can find her pro-life blog at jillstanek.com. She's a longtime nurse. I'm Greg Karimbas of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.